If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Ben Harrison.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Cards?
The game is five-card stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Part of this is just the cards, Data.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
Sure. Now, so are we on to a all-competition, all-the-time mode?
Yeah, I like to make it competitive now, I think.
Let me suggest something for the competition, because there's only 3 signed cards per box of portfolio prints, but we discovered in our last box that there are also lots of other bonus cards.
Right.
Do we want to call it a win if you get any kind of bonus card?
Yeah, I think that's fair. It also prolongs the bit, so we don't have to keep buying boxes of these cards.
They're fucking expensive.
Yeah, they sort of are.
Yeah.
All right, you ready to dig in?
I'm digging into my first pack.
Me too. For those playing at home, these, of course, are the Star Trek The Next Generation Portfolio Prints Trading Card Series 2. Hey, I got a good one. Right on top, it's Code of Honor.
Dang.
One of the great bad episodes ever.
Not so much a good one as a horrible one.
Oh my god, I got a signed card.
Damn it. Are you kidding?
First pack.
Aww.
First fucking pack. Are you serious? Yeah. I have biomolecular physiologist Z Ma, who is one of the Moroccan surgeons from Samaritan Snare.
Really?
Maybe the minorest of minor characters.
Did this person even have a line?
God, I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But right. I'm gonna dig into Z Ma's film biography here while you're digging for yours.
Yeah, I've got a Who Watches the Watchers, and I've got an imaginary friend card. So that's pretty exciting. Oh, I've got a Code of Honor card here too. All right. I'm on to the third pack, Adam.
Holy shit, Z Ma is a guy with a career.
Yeah?
Holy shit, he's been in everything. He was in Arrival.
Really?
Which I thought was one of the great sci-fi films.
I believe that you and I saw that together with our wives.
That's right, and when we came out of the movie, it was fake snowing on us in L.A.
Yeah, we were in one of those weird malls in L.A. where they make fake snow during the holidays.
That was all real right. Magical.
I have opened my third package of cards, Adam, and I have a whopper of a signed card.
Shut up.
This card has been personally signed by Spencer Garrett as Simon Tarsis in The Drumhead.
What?
Yeah, I got the guy with the lightly loafed ears.
Wow, good get.
That is a big card. That's a win. I mean, I lost the game, but I feel like I snatched a stalemate from the jaws of defeat.
You did. Wow. Good get.
Yeah.
Good job by us.
Yeah, this has been a... I like our modified card game.
The thing is, the next time we play it, it's going to take 40 minutes to get to anything special, because we're getting these so early.
Yeah. Well, we shit the bed, Adam. We've got to sleep in it.
As is the rule, you must sleep in a shat bed.
Yeah.
I think I have an insurmountable lead. That's tough. Like, cumulatively, I think it's four packs, two signed cards for me, and then what is it, like 18 packs, two signed cards for you?
You don't have to be a jerk about it, Adam. It all comes out even in the end, right?
Does it sound like I'm being a jerk? Maybe I'm a little cranky because this episode made me incredibly cranky. Did it make you feel that way?
Yeah, I have some feelings about it, Adam.
All right.
Should we get into it?
I think I would like to counsel you about those feelings. The feelings you have about Season 6, Episode 3, Man of the People.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Well, the entrepreneur starts this episode intervening in an attack that we don't get to see. There's like some bad ships attacking a good ship, and the entrepreneur comes in flexing, and that is enough to scare away the bad ships.
They don't want to take on the Enterprise.
But then we just cut to the, like, not moving outside of a fairly boring model of a spaceship. All excitement has been completely done away with.
Never to return, by the way, Ben.
Right. Yeah, and so they've got the captain of this junker on the radio, and he's like, "Hey, listen,
I'd like permission to transport two of our passengers to your ship,
and it would be great if you guys could take him because we can't defend ourselves, and people are going to keep attacking us."
Again, this is happening via non-FaceTime. This is like a standard. This is like a Skype call without the video function turned on.
It's FaceTime audio, which is almost a contradiction in terms.
I'm a little surprised they didn't call this episode Budget Constraints, because because the entire time they're making very specific choices here.
Yeah, even the loaf is cheap in this episode.
Some cheap-ass diner loaf. Yesterday's loaf, Ben.
So, yeah, the deal is, like, this guy that was under attack is a negotiator. He's a bit of a Ginger Jesus type. he's going to a planet to try to negotiate a truce between two factions that are on the verge of a hot war. You know, there's been some kind of like scattered conflict, and it's a problem for the Federation because it's taking place in a shipping route that the Federation likes to use. So they're pretty keen to get this guy to where he's going so that he can talk some sense into everybody.
I don't feel like Picard ever gets FOMO about these diplomatic missions, even though he's shuttling around a bunch of mediators from place to place. Like, we're sort of told that Picard is the king when it comes to diplomacy.
Right.
Like, not even he wants to watch this episode, you know? He's barely in it. He doesn't want to take on this mission himself. He's pretty satisfied ferrying a diplomat to and fro.
Yeah. This guy beams on board with his mom, his aging mother, and she steps off the transporter pad and is just immediately super duper rude to Counselor Troy.
What did you say?
Who has gone down there to greet them.
She lights into Counselor Troy, like from the pad too, so she's like really high and tall and is basically bent at the waist screaming at her.
Sit down and shut up!
Yeah.
What's weird about this scene isn't so much that the mom be crazy, but it's that the son, like, does basically nothing to explain away, like, what is really socially not a great scene.
Quiet! Or else I kill the bunny!
You know? Like, he does not defend her, really. He
right.
doesn't explain away what she's doing, and that's the thing that got my antenna up.
It's like Mark's dad being a big time prick to Dobby at the Christmas table in a peep show. I think Dobby was totally justified in leaving.
There you go, peep showing again. Ben, how's the peeping?
These aliens don't really have loaf. They just have some like henna tattoos on their foreheads.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like the costume department just took out like a brown Crayola marker and were like, this was kind of what you would look like if you were a Klingon.
Who is that kid from the Addams Family with the makeuped widow's peak?
Mm.
It's sort of like widow's peak loaf. Sort of like a Paul Ryan amount of widow's peak.
Yeah. Paul Ryan amount of political credibility.
Yeah. Yeah, so this guy is like, well, I think we better put mom to bed. So they just sort of shuffle off to the condo to be shown the food replicator by whoever's willing to show it to them.
Yeah. We come back and Picard is having like a three-way meeting with the negotiator guy, Alcar, and then like an admiral who's FaceTiming in. And I always feel like these meetings like are more awkward than is worth putting up with for them, you know?
Yeah.
You go into the conference room and they like insist on doing it as a video conference because like the LA office wants to see what's going on.
You never get the first minute and a half of these, which is like, all right, can you hear me? Like,
yeah,
I can see you, but I can't hear you. Maybe turn the camera a little to your left.
Yeah.
Actually, just move your seat. Just move your seat. That would be better.
It would have been more realistic if they had like Geordi like crawling around under Picard's desk, like trying to unplug and replug everything.
Maybe the computer shuts down because you have 32 megabytes of RAM and you're trying to run a program. It takes 128 to function smoothly. X-lax.
People come in here and they change things. They're not supposed to change things.
Oh, by the way, you're welcome.
The laptop that Picard has that he's using for this purpose is a real piece of shit. Like, they don't punch in on the screen. Instead, you see screen and side screen for this. And you really need to put the keyboard upside down and blow it out with the air can. It's looking real crusty and gross.
Yeah. That's no bueno.
Yeah. He's the captain. He should be able to get a new keyboard.
Yeah. The IT department on the entrepreneur is really not providing the latest and greatest to the staff.
If Barkley was your IT guy, you'd put it off too.
Well, the admiral takes the position that, like, yes, technically we could pass you off to any other transport ship, but that would sort of be putting their life in danger too, because everybody wants you dead, Alcar. So We're gonna go ahead and take responsibility for getting you to where you're going, and the Enterprise is gonna be your Uber for the evening.
What's unfortunate about the evening's plans is that Alcar's mom dies in them. maybe the least dramatic fashion.
So like Alcar goes to Worf yoga and like it wraps up and he's like having a nice hang with Troy. Like she drops him off at his quarters and his mommy comes out and continues her campaign of rudeness.
No war hangers!
And Troy goes to like kick it to Riker like, hey, like,
she frightens me, Will.
And the way that Troy describes his mom is like
malevolent,
which is like, you know, when you have a disagreement with a relative or whatever, you'll say you don't like them or you don't get along with them, or whatever. But that's a pretty big description of someone.
Yeah,
malevolent evil.
One of my best friends from high school, I one time took a walk with him and told him I thought that his girlfriend was no good for him, and that I thought they should break up. I should have used that term. I feel like it would have been easier to get my point across.
I love the idea that your description was insufficient to get him to do it, but if you had only used malevolent evil, it might have stuck.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, you know, he did it like 6 months later. I feel like I could have saved him a lot of grief if I had just, you know, had the courage of my convictions and used the words that I really meant.
That's not a great line for your bio. 420 friendly, no drama, malevolent evil. It attracts a very narrow sort of partner, doesn't it?
Yeah, or Craigslist roommate.
Yeah. I would argue it attracts most Craigslist roommates.
Yeah. So they are like it's one of these like now cliche Imzadi courtesy calls where
right.
Troy is kind of saying like, "Oh, I kind of want to bone down with the ambassador. Just wanted to let you know. Also, I think his mom is horrible." And they get a radio that his mom has bought the farm.
Alcar's mom has died in a sort of mummy position in which her forearms are just sticking out.
Yeah, it's like, did she freeze to death or did she just die?
She's looked dead the whole time, though, so they really have to run a tricorder over her to confirm that.
Yeah, they cast a very old-looking woman.
She is like the gypsy woman from the movie Thinner. Like,
yeah.
she is a real creep show. Like, great casting / great makeup on her. Like, I thought the whole deal was like suitably terrifying.
Yeah, and she performs it like beautifully. I mean, she is just as frightening as she needs to be.
Yeah, at like the entire time I was expecting her to wake up and start screaming again. Like that's how scary I found her.
Alcar and Troy like walk off and he's like, "Gosh, I'm really bummed out. Do you want to help me with something? Because you and me, we're empaths. We're the only two people on the ship that can do this. There's an important funereal rite that my culture would perform right now. And if you can do me a solid, you know, I can put this ugly episode behind me and get on with my work."
So she goes into his condo and they touch rocks. And a moment later, she's got a funereal disease. I said a funereal disease, Ben.
Yeah, no, the studio audience and I heard you the first time, and they chuckled, and now they're not so happy.
No.
They seem upset at him.
Are you saying boo or boorns?
Yee.
I don't know how they got in here with those pitchforks and torches, but I'm getting a little worried.
You know, it sucks that we live in a society where a contemporary woman should not go into a stranger's apartment and do funereal things with them without suspecting that something fucked up is about to happen. And at the same time, shouldn't you not go into the strange man's apartment to touch rocks if you don't know exactly what the funereal rite is going to involve? Like, she doesn't even ask really what it's about, but she's down.
Yeah, it's just being very like helpful and accommodating, and he really takes.
I don't
want to
victim blame Ben. Like, it sounds like I'm victim blaming, but what I'm more getting at is like, shouldn't there be
like a policy?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of things on this ship, I feel like there's some security concerns that are just never addressed.
Because it sure seems like aliens in this universe are constantly trying to take over your body.
Fairly constantly. Several times a year, you can expect an alien possession.
I mean, Troy's been taken over just 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. So they touch the rocks, and she kind of like looks up at him in shock, right?
Yeah. It's not like she was blown back or anything.
No, she doesn't get a butt injury or anything, but she doesn't say anything. It's like not entirely clear what that shock is about. Is she like, is she being taken over, or is she like realized that something weird just happened? What's the deal? How did you interpret that moment?
Well, that's part of the fun, Ben. They don't show you very much, so they keep you guessing.
It is a tiny
the B storyline is that the doctor is very keen on cutting open Alcar's mommy. She wants to get in there, get up in them guts at him. Go digging them
guts like a gardener. She's real excited to give a Y incision to an old person.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you could probably just use a plastic piece of cutlery from a takeout container.
You mean the tensillary strength of her flesh is pretty reduced? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm getting at, Ben.
Yeah, she's tenderized. The doctor is like, she's like, this is just so weird. Like, she died for no reason. What the fuck is happening here? And what's like,
another thing about her death is, did you notice that that Alcar is in the back, like, hands tented, just sort of watching her dispassionately? That was another weird thing. Like, his mom just died in front of him. And she's like, Well, she was an oldie but goodie. They don't make him like that anymore. Off to my work.
Yeah, he's like, he says kind of in passing, like, oh, she was super sick. I feel bad about having even brought her on board, but
yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
It's your mom, dude.
Her sickness manifest into just being a total B to Deanna Troi at all times.
The captain is like, hey, like, unfortunately, you can't Y-incision this old bat because because Alcar strictly forbid it.
And we have no alternative but to concur with his wishes.
She's like, well, okay. So we cut to Troi, and she's doing some Klingon yoga by herself. And this is a wordless scene where she is just like having like a sexy time. Like she's like checking herself out in the mirror. She's like loosening up the neckline on her yoga gi.
I really feel like you could rescore this scene with like a David Coverdale late 80s, early 90s, like synth rock song.
Yeah.
Like, because it plays like a music video.
Yeah, and she's, this is maybe like the most sexiest stuff we've seen since the Edo planet. Like, she's really getting a lot of skin on display. Like,
yeah.
And by the time she leaves, she's like, you know, like button popped off. She's going to give Lloyd Braun the wrong idea type of situation.
It's clear something's up with her. But what is it, Ben? Will we ever know?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think that the thing I wondered in these early scenes is how taken over is she? Is she like feeling like she's Troi, but she's just got a real lady boner for Alcar? Because like she does like do some Troi stuff. Like she has a therapy session, and she's not totally acting like herself, but she's also not totally not acting like herself. She's not deep voice Troi.
She's a little meaner than normal.
Yeah.
That seems a little out of character. There's a mom hair in there, but like a youthful mom hair on the couch. She's got some complaints about a coworker.
It seems as though Lieutenant Pinder just doesn't want me in his section.
And Troi basically gives her the, do you even know how boring you sound right now? Maybe this is all your fault. Maybe you don't belong here. Maybe you should transfer to the hood.
Maybe that's more your speed, youthful mom hair.
Yeah, and it really, like, takes her apart.
But I love being on the Enterprise.
This mom hair woman is like, oh, God, I had no idea I was this insufferable to be around. I think maybe I'll consider a transfer. And she,
I love
like,
that they leave this hanging. Like, this is never resolved.
I would love to have come back to her later. Just seeing her filing the paperwork for transfer.
Yeah, she's
packing
like,
up all of her shit.
She's the Simon Tarsus of this episode, the kind of innocent that gets their career ruined by what's happening to the rest of the ship.
You can tell that the burn is so sufficient because she thanks Troi for it too. Like she's so fucked up by it that by the end she's like,
"Thank you."
Yeah, Troi has become the dom in their relationship.
Yeah. Pretty rugged.
Yeah. There's like a whole bunch of fun and games like this. Like there's like the time when Troi like picks up a 19-year-old ensign on the elevator. There's like, you know, Riker showing up at her apartment to try and get some work done, and she's in like the most outrageously sexy, I don't know, is that like a nightgown with no back, or is it supposed to be a dress, or what?
It looked like one of those impossible dresses that people buy but never wear. Like, you buy that dress, but I don't know what occasion you wear that dress for.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like, at its core, this episode is a little slut-shamey. Like, it's like, oh, like, Troy is bad because she's being so sexy all the time and having sex with people. Like, and that's bad, bad, bad.
Yeah, there's like a ratio of Troy weaponizing her job and then Troy weaponizing her sexuality. And there are far more weaponized sexuality scenes than there are with the job weaponization.
Yeah, and that would have been a much more interesting episode, I think, if I mean, she has this very privileged role on the ship where she counsels the captain and counsels the
crew. She
could
really fuck some people up as counselor.
Yeah, I mean, she could instigate some major morale problems on the ship by just like planting little seeds.
Yeah.
But instead it's her slinking into 10 forward in the dress that Marty McFly's mom wears in Biff Tannen's casino.
Yeah, and you know, like, the effect is sort of the same. I felt sad when I saw Marty's mom in that dress.
Yeah.
In the second Back to the Future movie, and I felt a little sad in this scene because you know that she is under some sort of possession because she's treating her friends like shit.
Yeah.
And she's acting all out of sorts, and I felt bad for her, especially because she likes this ding-dong. Like, she's totally obsessed with Alcar. Yeah. She doesn't want him hanging around with other dudes. She doesn't want him hanging around with the one female associate that he works with. She's starting to turn into his mom.
What did you say?
Yeah. She's slowly but surely.
I mean, for a lot of people, that's what they're into. Doesn't seem like Alcar's down, though.
Yeah, he's being a little cold with her. So we should talk about the doctor's little project. At some point, she's down in engineering, and she's comparing the transporter logs to the readings that she got off of Alcar's mommy. And they like don't make any sense, right? She has aged a ton in the 3 days that she was on board before she bought the farm. But yeah, so she's like, well, this pretty much clinches it. Like, something is up here, and I want to get to the bottom of it, and I want to do this fucking autopsy, and I wish everybody would stop like standing in my way.
She gets like four scenes throughout the episode where she's like tangentially in conversations, but inserting the autopsy thing into it. Like,
yeah.
God, I'd love to help you out with this engineering problem, but I feel like performing an autopsy would also be useful.
Yeah, she's like, you guys know how you have, like, tons of game tape on me being a very ethical doctor, right? Let me make the call on this one, okay?
She starts wearing the Moroccan surgical uniform around just just to be ready.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this old thing?
It's actually quite comfortable, more comfortable than you'd think.
Yeah. It's a very stretchy, breathable fabric.
Mine smells like Pulaski.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurse the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
And then eventually, like, Alcar comes in to like, scold Troy and... She's gone from Elvira to like Topanga Canyon mom vibes. she's like the kind of mom that cultivates some high grade marijuana in the backyard.
I don't know how we were so simpatico on that reference, but I was totally gonna tag that joke with the mom who starts smoking weed and then starts growing weed and then starts selling weed. Like she's just retired from her school teacher job.
Yeah.
And she starts dabbling, but then she really likes it. Stops dyeing her hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do we both know... Yeah, that's not for the pod, but it's funny that we both know them.
And so, like, I guess they've like pulled up at this planet where this problem is happening. So Alcar and his homies head off to do their peace negotiation, and Troy comes into the transporter room as they're trying to leave, and she is like full face burlap at this point.
It's hard to see her like this.
Yeah.
It's hard to see her like this, not because she has aged, but because she has aged this way, which is real cakey.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's something wrong with this show and aging people. Like, I feel like they just reused the same loaf that they put on DeForest Kelly in episode one on her. They've like had it in cold storage, and they're like, oh yeah, we've got some age loaf. We'll put
that's
that
what
on
all
you.
The barbicide is for. They just put the loaf in that liquid.
Yeah. They take it out, dry it off, put it on, and paint it down to take on Troy's new tan.
It really goes to show how much aging makeup technology has advanced over the years, because now it would look great, but good yeah. Lord.
Seriously. So she like comes in with a knife and she's like,
I won't let her have you.
And Picard gets in the way, gets a little flesh wound on his shoulder, and the lady transporter chief has to come out and put Troy in a full Nelson until the security team can show up.
Where did she get that knife?
I don't know. That kind of looked like a Worf knife, right?
It did.
Picard's super lucky that it didn't have poison on it.
That's what I'm saying. I would have loved to have seen her swipe that off of his counter. She pulls it out of his kitchen. Like, Worf's knife block has got to be the size of a mini fridge. Like, it's just enormous. There's like a batleth in it. There's all the poison knives. There's the knife where you hit the button and the blades pop out. That's a fun Klingon knife. That's probably good for fish, right?
Worf has got to like if Worf gets up in the middle of the night and is like looking around in a drawer for something, that's some pretty dangerous shit, right?
Yeah. Victorinox by Vibrox. A warrior's knife.
Gerber, a baby's knife.
Yeah. God, they should have done more with Worf's interest in cutlery. Like, we know he's a baker, but what if he was really into cooking?
Yeah. I mean, they sort of imply in this episode that he teaches a yoga class every day.
Yeah, at 700, too. Like, that's a wake up and get after it sort of time.
Yeah. That's like Worf really has a lot to prove to everybody. Oh, yeah, I'm the chief of security. I'm also up at the crack of fuck every day teaching you how to do yoga.
What we don't get in this scene is Worf taking extra time with some of the people. Like, that's good, Doris, but we need you to bend at your waist.
Try to keep up, Freddy. If this is too advanced for you, you can rest in child's pose and join us at the next cycle.
Yeah.
I feel like if Worf really taught yoga, it would just be all like Warrior 1, Warrior 2, Warrior 3, Reverse Warrior, Warrior 2, Warrior 1, Warrior 2, Warrior 3.
And with just that bit of headcanon, we know exactly why Worf loves yoga so much.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
Well, in Six Bay, Beverly is like, I mean, with what has happened to Troy, Beverly has convinced the captain to look past Alcar's wishes and let her do the Y incisions she's been so keen on. So she's going to get up in them guts.
Go digging them guts like a gardener.
And Picard beams down to the planet with Worf to tell Alcar he's like onto him. And he's basically pulled Alcar out of the peace negotiations and is like, dude, like, we know you fucked something up with Troy and we're going to take you back to the ship and you're going to like explain to us what happened. And Alcar is like totally unrepentant about this. He's like, yeah, no, I I killed her, and
usually my receptacles survive for years.
Like, she died so that this peace negotiation could happen.
His explanation is like breathtakingly dark. He's like, yeah, so anyways, I gather these women and I dump my mental waste products into them. Like, all of the negative energy and emotions that I have.
Yeah.
I just take a great big dump into their brains.
Yeah, that he calls them his receptacles.
Receptacles.
Yeah, that just sort of frees me up to be a great diplomat. I'm sure you've noticed what a great diplomat I am. Everyone says it. Everyone says I'm the greatest diplomat, but what I do is I shit on everyone around me, and that's what makes me feel so great.
Ugh. He's a psychopath.
Mental waste products is what he refers to them as.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I think it also at one point in this little exegesis, he explains that the Trump grill makes the best taco bowls.
It's interesting to consider like the catalog of mental waste products, because if you think back to what came earlier in the episode, Troy's demonstrable emotions were sexual and sociopathic, I guess. Yeah. But like
jealousy, rage, and sex.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of different negative emotions that I sort of wish that we had gotten.
Right. You know? And also like it is so telling that that sex is a negative emotion in the world of this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Riker would never dump sex into somebody else.
Not unless they wanted it. I mean, this is an episode that shows basically nothing. It shows glowy stones touching, and it ages Troy. But it asks you to headcanon a lot of this, and it's some pretty terrible headcanon.
Yeah.
Is this guy one of the most evil people on the show so far? I kind of feel like he is.
He's eviler than he is played to be, and I feel like that's a level of subtlety that we don't often get.
Yeah, he isn't arch.
Yeah, I mean, he's an antagonist that is not necessarily like designed as one.
Right.
But this scene ends with Picard going like, "You're coming with me, bub. Book him, Worfo." And the camera like swings over to Worf, and Worf is having his dustbuster removed from his pocket by a couple of toughs from the planet. How did Worf let these guys get the drop on him?
Like, you know how police officers have a gun holster where the gun can only be removed by the person wearing the holster? Like, that's modern technology. And Worf doesn't have that. He's got it Velcroed to his pocket.
Yeah.
The continuing adventures of Worf Rashenko, not great security officer.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta know that if you don't show up to the drop at least an hour early, then somebody might get the drop on you.
Yeah. And he doesn't, like, he's got two guys in perfect back fist range.
Yeah.
I was expecting him to do one of those, like, double back fist moves.
Yeah.
Doesn't do it.
That would have been good. Well, you know, they've basically been, like, they've been 86'd from this planet. And they get back to the Entrepreneur, and Dr. Crusher has a pretty bold plan. Her idea is that they are going to medically kill Troy for up to 30 minutes, and then that will force Alcar to like start dumping into somebody else. So as long as they can get him to do the dump within that 30 minutes, they can bring Troy back, and then they can like arrest him or stop him from doing whatever he's doing.
The crew agrees with this plan because Deanna Troi's character has been in a persistent vegetative state for most of 6 seasons.
They're like, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much a lateral move at this point, right?
Yeah.
Well, they put the plan in action. Alcar's like coming out of the negotiation, chest puffed out because he's like gotten the peace achieved, and he takes like a stumble. And Betty Draper is there with him, and she's like, "Oh man, you're exhausted." And he's like, "Oh, something's wrong." And Picard,
my emotional toilet's plugged.
Do you you don't happen to have a plunger? So Picard radios down and he's like, "Hey asshole, I got your receptacle. Come and get it." And Alcar comes up. They do a little staged, like, you know, mark down the time of death moment when he comes into Six Bay.
Yeah.
And he and Betty Draper head off to his quarters, and he's like, "Oh man, I feel terrible about this. Do you want to do death ritual with me?"
"The only thing that makes me feel good after seeing death is death ritual. Gotta touch these stones."
Yeah. There's something so funereal about it. So he whips them out, whips out them stones, and he and Betty Draper are like getting ready to do it, and they're dialing Troy in. They're like cleansing her system of all the bad fifis that he's dumped into her. They get her back to, you know, within range of normal, and they like revive her, and suddenly Alcar is like in major distress.
He was so tantalizingly close to touching stones.
Yeah.
And it's hard to tell if his initial distress is about being so close and being unable to finish, or if the Troy switch being hit is the thing. But he is in a terrific amount of pain.
Yeah.
And the Worf that's been posted outside of his door bursts in to find him in a progressively aging state.
Yeah.
Like, cut to Worf, cut to him, cut to Worf, cut to him, and he's, like, getting older and older.
They beamed Betty Draper out of there, like, right before he could grab onto her. And yeah, like, Troy is like, morphing younger while he morphs older. He manages to stumble and flail around this room a lot without going through any glass tables.
That was a huge surprise to me.
I know. Maybe the union has, like, really strengthened their position at the negotiating table.
It feels like on this show, you don't fall over and hit the ground without hitting a table first.
Yeah.
Like, if someone notices you falling, someone will push a glass table in front of you to break your fall.
Yeah. His loaf is even cheaper and more upsetting than Troy's is because it's on screen less, so they, like, didn't quite work it out in the same way. Boy, it's rough.
Yeah. Luckily, you don't see too much of him before he's off screen. I love Worf here, like, making no attempts to save his life.
No.
Just sort of watches him fall, looks to the ceiling, taps his communicator, and goes,
"Ambassador Alcar is dead."
So the button on the episode is a newly youthified Troy in her quarters with Riker, having the conversation we've all had after we've been too fucked up, which is like, "Oh, I have a feeling I did some bad things. Tell me I wasn't too bad, will you?" And Riker's like,
"Tell me it wasn't apparently story level bad."
Yeah, exactly. And Riker's like, "Well, you were a real mess. I'll be honest with you, but I'll love you till the end of time. Till you're old and gray anyway. You could do no wrong in front of me, babe."
Yeah. That was nice of him.
Yeah. That's true friendship right there.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
Ben, before we turned on the mics for this one, I was convinced that this was my least favorite episode of the series.
Whoa.
It was so bad. But, like, talking through it with you made it seem like a lot more fun than it actually was.
Uh-huh.
Like, I feel like this is one instance, one of the rare instances, I'm sure, where the pod is better than the show. But, good Lord, was it awful. There may be an explanation for this, though. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, no. Did you do research again, Adam?
I did, but this research is incredibly germane to this conversation. So, Relics, the next episode, was supposed to be in this episode slot. But they pushed it back because Jimmy Doohan had, like, a scheduling conflict or something. Like, he had a convention to do.
He had to sit at a card table and sign people's headshots of him.
Yeah. So what they did is they played telephone on the episode. They had five writers write five acts, and then they Franken-scripted it together, which is why all the act breaks are so fucked up. Like, that's a major thing. Every act ends and begins in a totally fucked up way.
Yeah.
So that's why it doesn't feel like there's a lot of continuity, like, either in story or energy that goes through it.
Yeah. There was just a lot of continuity problems in general with this one. Yeah. Like the pips were all over the place on everybody's uniforms. Like, I feel like the design of the aliens seems super rushed. Like, they came up with his costume, and then they were just like, everybody has the same costume. Like, they all have the white scarf that's, like, tightly tied under a tunic. That's what they wear.
Yeah. Unsurprisingly, Brandon Braga said that one of his favorite parts of the show, it was enjoyable to see Troy acting strange and dressing in skimpy outfits.
Class act, Brandon Braga.
Thanks, Brandon. Good job by you.
What kind of name is Brandon?
Someone undeserving of the D, I guess. That one won't make the show.
Why not?
Did you like the episode, Ben?
No. I mean, I concur that it was a fun one to zing on with you, but watching it, I found I watched it like in three sittings. I like got bored and like took my dog for a walk, and then it didn't really hold my attention. So
we sure are getting a lot of Troy falls in love with the wrong person storylines, you know?
Yeah, we are.
They're really going back to that well.
Yeah.
Like, she could be such an interesting character, right? Like, we talked about it before. Like, if she weaponized her job a little more, the destruction that would cause, that's fun.
That would have been real fun.
But no, if you're Brandon Braga, you gotta stick her into some dresses and sex her up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good times.
See if James Harwood finds her missing button in The Lost and Found.
Yeah. Well, one area where we always get the D, Ben, is P1s. You want to check our messages?
Let's check them.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
All right, Ben. Our first priority one message is of a personal nature. It is from Liz in D.C., and parenthetically, Liz says, do a live show here, maybe. And it's for Ben and Adam and the Greatest Gen online community. Ben, I think it's no secret that we've talked about touring the show again on the East Coast this time. I think D.C. is definitely on that list.
D.C. is one of our biggest towns.
Come and see us, Liz, when we get a date down. I think it's almost assured that we're going to be there.
We're thinking like end of summer is probably our window for our next tour. And we're talking about hitting a bunch of cities in the Midwest and on the East Coast. And I think it's fair to assume that we will be within striking distance of DC on that tour.
Yeah. All right. The message goes like this. It's for you, me, and everyone else. Thank you so much for this podcast and the community that has sprung up around it. I literally lol on a regular basis, and I need that. My grandmother recently died after a long illness, and this podcast has helped me when I've needed distraction. Please don't do Kevin or Cosby in her honor. She'd be horrified.
I don't know what to do here, Adam.
Liz, I want you to know that I'm especially good at eulogies, because you see, I've watched a great many people die. I had to give exactly 40 billion eulogies when my planet was exterminated by the Hooshnack.
You see, a father has to eulogize people that pass away, and when there's 40 billion people dead and you're the only one still around, Rudy, the only thing you can do is stand in that position for all of them, Theo.
Liz, we're very sorry about the passing of your grandmother, quite sincerely, but we hope that those impressions give you some comfort and some humor during this difficult time. Knowing your grandmother will not be hearing these awful, awful impressions, we thought we take that angle with you. So hopefully that did not offend.
Please come say hi when we come to your town.
Yeah, we'll see you at the end of the summer.
Adam, we have another priority one message here. It's from Jason with the good hair and a Y. That's Jason with a Y. And it is to the only Sherry I've ever taken to. Is that a reference to something I said?
I think so. Noted Sherry enthusiast,
Jason
Benjamin R. Harrison.
Well, here's the message. Well, I guess you shot first, but I think it's a trap. This is not the P1 you're looking for, but may the force be with you anyway. Wait, that's not Star Trek. Anyway, your scarf collection will be so valuable in the future. Why, you might have enough to buy that ship. Let's hope for a Boston live show. Come up and we'll get you Shimoda faced. Whoa. We don't have any control over the timing of these messages. Those are controlled by the mothership at Max Fun HQ. But that's fun that two different P1s were live show references.
I love Boston.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go back.
We'll be in both places and probably several others also.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, guys. If you have any tour ideas or any other messages you'd like to give to friends or family, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Personal messages are $100. And Ben, there is also a commercial option for $200 where viewers can bring attention to their various projects or works.
Right. If you would like to get your message out to, like, literally 30,000, 40,000 people, and you have $200 to spare for it, we got you.
40,000 very specific kinds of people.
Yeah. Called niche marketing, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, narrow that band. P1s, MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Fill out a quick and easy form. We'll read it on the air just for you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Were you able to restrain your emotional shit enough to find a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
You gotta hold it in, Ben, sometimes. Hold it in!
I had a Shimoda in the hands of the dead this episode, because... Uh-huh. I don't know if you noticed this, but the lady that turns out not to have been Alcar's mom, but one of his receptacles, when she dies, we talked about how her hands are frozen in place. When Alcar goes down, his hands do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, what's up with that? I feel like that was the one piece of direction that the director was able to give. Like... Now, when you die, don't get all cartoony, but I'm going to need you to mummify those arms.
It's such a specific choice, and it is not addressed.
Yeah. Yeah. What's up with that?
Weird.
What do you think they do with those stones? They got to destroy them, right? Those are really powerful stones.
Blow those fuckers out the airlock.
That's what I'm saying. Give those things the alien queen treatment. You think the next person to use that condo is like, hey, this is pretty nice. Bed's pretty soft.
Yeah.
Replicator works pretty well. What are these things?
Yeah,
these
like,
those little balls that you're supposed to like twist in your hands for stress relief.
Anytime you check into an Airbnb, you kind of like get the lay of the land. You like definitely look in the cabinets and see what kind of a place it is, you know?
You definitely mess with the balls if they're available. Ben, my Shimoda definitely goes to Turbo Lift Guy, but not in the Turbo Lift scene with Troy. Troy, while experiencing her weaponized sexuality, she's been recently rebuffed by Alcar, and she stomps out of his condo into the Turbo Lift and finds another person for her to lay her eyes on. This man is an extra from the Inglourious Basterds movie. He is from, like, Third Reich Central Casting, like, sort of troublingly Reichish, I would say. She drags him back to her quarters, and then we get a scene where Riker walks in and sort of comes upon him as he was leaving. And, oh boy, like, could you imagine following the act that is Riker?
Yeah.
That's tough, man. That's and tough, like, tough and stuff. He's like an ensign.
Yeah.
Like Commander Riker walks in, and you're with his ex. Not a
Adam,
good time.
Adam, this guy had some 90s hair. This was like a beautiful time in the 90s for a certain kind of person, because yeah. I think yep. this is his real hair, but it looks like hair plugs. So there was like a window of like 3 years where you could get hair plugs and just be like, no, this is the look I'm going for.
You got to believe me. Sometimes I will wash my hair and not put any product in it and forget. And I'll walk around all day and my hair will just be a fucking frizz ball. That's what this guy's hair looks like. He's just owning the frizz.
There's something going on with the frizz on this show right now.
Yeah.
Like the last episode, we had tons of Barkley frizz, tons of Columini frizz.
You could make the argument that hair and makeup is striking right now, and we just don't know it.
Yeah.
They're trying to get by.
Hair and makeup is striking, but they've made a deal with the glass table people.
You know what's great is when you go on strike, you can have the glass tables do the picketing for you.
Yeah.
Because they'll work really long hours. They do not complain at all.
No. As long as there's no Klingons going through them,
yeah.
They're pretty happy.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start, and these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The essential for men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off. Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVES. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVES for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVES.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Do we have a better episode coming up next time, Ben?
The next episode is season 6, episode 4, Relics. Trapped in limbo for 75 years, Star Trek's Scotty awakens to join the next generation in the 24th century. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
I do remember this episode.
This is an all-timer, Adam.
It's supposed to be. I wonder if it holds up.
I have very fond memories of this episode. I am excited to see it.
I wonder if it's one finger short of a whole set. That one's not going to make the episode either. Been really talking for the edit lately, you know?
Yeah, we sure have.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this. This has got some good Trek science happening.
Yeah.
It's like some peak sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, some very like this is what Trek can do kind of stuff. Well, that'll be our next episode.
Ben, one thing that never gets old is how chatty our viewers are. On Twitter, using the hashtag GreatestGen. We're on there as @CutForTime and @BenjaminRAHR. We've got Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Instagram.
Yeah, I will probably not have been as active on all of those as I typically am, because as you are hearing this, I am most likely just re-entering the United States from a long trip abroad. So get back in there, get in the mix. I wanna catch up, I don't know. I just really enjoy our communities and engaging with them.
Yeah, you're gonna be gone for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's gonna be a long trip.
I'll do my best to keep the light on for you, keep the conversational torch lit, keep the talking stick moving around the room,
keep the Motel 6 that is our online community open and ready for business.
Keep my mental waste products from dumping on too many people.
Well, that's something I'm looking forward to being back in the mix, Adam. And
yeah,
I'm sure you'll do a great job while I'm away.
I'll do my best.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for all of the other music. Should thank the great folks at MaximumFun.org for their support, and everybody that donates through MaximumFun.org/donate. Everybody that leaves a nice review on iTunes.
People who are nice enough to buy awesome glassware and t-shirts. We're almost due for another t-shirt, Ben.
Yeah, we should think about that. Yeah. I know we've got some cool stuff in the works for our tour, but those will be tour-exclusive joints.
Right. It's going to be fun. Yeah. I'm excited to tour again.
Me
you're gonna
too.
Get, you're going to get back from being overseas, and we're going to take you right back out on the road again. You're going to be road-weary.
Well, with that, Adam, we will be back at you next time. Another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. And an episode of The Greatest Generation that is drinking green stuff.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.